You may proceed.
I'm Patrick Merkel on behalf of JSR Mechanical. I feel like we have almost a mechanical statutory interpretation here with regard to 8.01.335. The Virginia Trial Lawyers Association filed an amicus brief, which has been accepted by Your Honor. And the case is reduced in a nutshell to whether or not the circuit courts may impose a good cause requirement when application is made for reinstatement of the case pursuant to that statute, 8.01.335, the B part. And what we know is that there used to be a good cause requirement under the statute, which was eliminated in 1999. And the fact that it had been tested and deleted by the legislature ought to be dispositive of this issue. The fact of the matter is, when I made my petition for reinstatement, I did indeed say, hey, I've got, not only am I complying with the statute, but I've got a good reason for reinstating this case. And I spelled that out in my motion. The judge had a humorous anecdote at the bench, which is not part of the record. In fact, there is no record because it was never in testimony. It was just argument.
Was it ever made clear to the judge your position that though you proffered a good reason from your perspective that you didn't really need to, and that if you rejected your good reason, you still had a right to your reinstatement?
Well, yes, indeed, that was what he overruled, and I indicated that on the face of the order before he signed it. So, in other words, the objections, which are traditionally written on the form order before it's submitted to the court, are there for the court to see, and they reiterate what has already been argued or stated either by the court or by the counsel.
But I think you're right, and usually that's true, but it's not always true. A lot of times you'll see objections on an order that were thought up after the hearing, and I'm not trying to go anywhere with this. I'm just trying to figure out, did the judge really have a moment where someone said to him, look, pause for a second, there's a pretty substantial change in the statute, and you need to understand that I don't need to show anything, I just have an automatic right to reinstate.
I would never have argued that I had an automatic right to reinstatement because there are the requirements of notice and timing.
Automatic right, in other words, you don't need to show cause for why you want to reinstate.
I did argue. I certainly argued that I didn't need to show cause. I did not, at the time, understand that the statute had at one point included that language from 1997. That was actually a matter of legislative history, which was revealed as the appellate process went along, and it simply buttressed the original argument made before the circuit court. And frankly, I don't think that the court was aware of that. You know, most of these cases that are dismissed under 8.01.335, they stay dismissed. In my entire career, I've reinstated two. I did them both in the same year, but that's beside the point. So that's where I believe the Supreme Court must focus its attention on whether or not that statutory exclusion applies to this order.
Now, counsel, in light of the fact that you were not aware of the statutory change and perhaps the judge was not, what would the judge make of the use of the word may? Any case discontinued or dismissed under provisions of this subsection may be reinstated. Could the judge reasonably think that gave him or her discretion?
We discussed that at the panel argument, and that was one where we went back and forth as to who does that may run in favor to. In other words, what if it said shall? Okay, does that mean that a practicing lawyer is committing malpractice if he doesn't reinstate his case? You see? So I felt that, and I believe the statute is written that way, that the may runs in favor of the litigant, that they may reinstate this case on that basis. And that was not the question that was articulated in the order, that the judge did not indicate that, you know, hey, I have the right as the judicial authority to exercise discretion, and I'm going to exercise my discretion using that part of the statute that says may to just deny your reinstatement for lack of good cause.
And I thought that, I don't think I was on the panel, but I anticipated that argument, and I too wondered who the may applied, to whom the may applied. And I'm looking at, for example, the non-suit statute, which clearly says the plaintiff may recommence his action.
Yeah.
But this may is in a different position, not connected to either the court or the plaintiff. I was just curious as to what your read on that is.
Like I said, it's a nice mechanical academic question on statutory interpretation. And unfortunately, it's not just applicable to JSR Mechanical versus AERCO. That's why the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association weighed in on this, because this can have an effect across the state, across all the counties, across all the circuits, where then, as Your Honor is indicating, the word may be used differently in one part of the state versus another. One circuit can come up with a good cause requirement that is different from a good cause requirement in another. I think that's why the statute doesn't include that.
That's not a terribly bad point, because good cause and equitable broad concepts of fairness are interlaced in rules and statutes by the bucket load. And the fact that judges can exercise those discretionary powers in different ways is the price of having a system with more than one judge. But the problem I'm worried about is, does your interpretation make subsection A really not really worth worrying about anymore, the two-year period? Does it really render it superfluous if you have an automatic right under the three-year period anyway?
The two-year period correctly, the reinstatement is simpler by just coming in and asking for a trial date. Am I right?
Yeah, and that's the part of the, it's related to Justice Powell's question, because it's really clear in A that you do have an automatic right, that there's no for cause, there's no hearing on the merits. You just come in and make your reinstatement request. And if you were just trying to come up with something sensible, you'd think that if it's more of a delay, you'd have less of a right. But as I understand what you're saying, you have equally an automatic right. You just got to come back and say, please, let me have my case back.
Well, you show that you provided notice to these defendants, which may not be easy. If you sat down on the job and 2.5 years has gone by and you can't find these people, especially if they were pro se litigants, you may not be able to show that you've met your notice requirement. That wasn't the case here. We were able to identify and locate both defendants.
Can I ask you one, it's kind of like a linguistic question, but it's about interpreting the statute. And you talk about, because it is a very important question, who the word may is being directed to, and B, it says may be reinstated.
Yes.
Is what it says. Well, an attorney can't reinstate the case. Wouldn't it have to be a judge who reinstated the case? Because you're doing it on motion to the court. And if that's the case, then the may's got to be directed to the judge as opposed to the litigant.
Well, certainly the judge isn't going to do anything if an attorney doesn't come in with his motion. And so I would say that the may be reinstated addresses the cause of action itself.
It doesn't your position doesn't necessarily have to be addressed to the lawyer or the court. It may mean, the word may mean is capable of.
It's possible.
Is yeah. possible.
Yes, that's my
and
opinion.
It's not really a shall or a permissive whatever. It's just a statement. It's possible to do this upon motion. That means it's not every case. Right. And good cause.
But he took out
well,
good cause.
I mean, I think yeah. the good cause requirement hasn't been tried and removed. And that may be because someone, not me, but somebody looked at that and said, wait a sec, you're getting into two process issues when you start imposing that good cause requirement, specifically because you're now asking people possibly to have to argue their case for the purpose of reinstating. If I could reserve my time, I have just
4 minutes, 46 seconds.
May it please the court, my name is Brett Antonides, and with me is Ashley Jackson. We represent the Appalee Airco Supply, Inc. I think a lot of the questions that were asked of appellant's counsel are quite pertinent, but I want to start with pointing out that on brief, the first argument that we made was that I believe by the failure of appellant's counsel to file a written statement in lieu of transcript, we have an absence or a void of information that would be particularly helpful to this court, and that would be a rendition by him, by me, and by the court, trial court itself, as to what exactly occurred and what the bases were more amplified than simply his self-serving objections noted at the end of the order. And I would note that the wording of the order, good or bad, rests partially with me, although the court obviously signed it. I'm the one that drafted the order. I would point out that the order does not say simply that there was no good cause. And I think there is importance to the words other sufficient grounds do not exist. So the court, in my view, having been there and based upon what I think is the correct reading of the plain language of the statute, was applying its judicial discretion and determining on the basis of all of the facts and circumstances. Remember, this is the trial court, which has been aware of the initiation of this case and the lack of any proceedings in this case, and then the arguments, both written and oral, by appellant's counsel to the trial court. It is the trial court, the one that is best suited to determine, based upon the totality of the situation, whether or not grounds exist within its judicial discretion to grant the motion to reinstate or to deny it, and that the basis upon which this court would then be reviewing that determination would be, was there an abuse of discretion, much like we heard other cases dealing with judicial discretion being talked about this morning.
Counsel, would you be kind enough to bring the statute up to the podium, 8.01.335?
Yes.
Because it's interesting, not only the may versus shall issue, but the issue of discretion. Look at the first sentence of subsection A. Except as provided in subsection C, any court, ... may, in its discretion. The subject is any court. The verb is may, in its discretion. Look at the first sentence of subparagraph B. Any court, ... may, in its discretion. Again, same subject, same exact terminology. Look at D. Any court, ... may, in its discretion. Again, the exact same terminology. It appears that the General Assembly is saying, when we intend to give the court discretion, we're going to say it in this statute. Now, look at the sentence that's at issue here. It doesn't say any court. It says any case, ... may be reinstated on motion. An entirely different construction than the three identical constructions that are all around it. If the General Assembly intended your interpretation, they had already used one construction three times identically. They would have been capable of saying any court, ... may, in its discretion, following motion from a party in interest, following motion and notice to parties in interest, reinstate the case. If your interpretation is correct, why did the General Assembly have a dramatically different sentence construction for this particular provision?
Well, at the risk of doing what other people did. Excellent question.
Thank you.
I believe that
if
you look at this and think about statutes being written by legislatures and so forth, every one of the examples that you used is in the first sentence of the section. And if you were to track each of these sections, and I will just focus on B, it then uses the word may four times in the subsection B. And I think the fairer reading and the correct reading is, rather than be repetitive with the discretion concept, it's stated in the first sentence of each subsection, and then when the word may, and especially somebody, one of your honors, brought up the may be reinstated words, those are, and then it says on motion, those are clearly intended, in my view, and I think a plain and fair reading of it, to be vesting the court. The court is the one after a motion who is vested with the responsibility and the right to reinstate the case, not the litigant.
And interestingly, counsel, that is an excellent answer, and I anticipated it. And I actually did look and parse the additional sentences throughout the statute. And in each instance, it uses the subject, the court. And it says the court may or the court shall. Generally, it says the court shall. The court may do something. And if the court has done that, then the court shall do the following. This is the only one that I can find which doesn't begin with the court.
Why? Well, I would hate to cast aspersions on legislatures. And maybe it's not an aspersion at all, but maybe it is.
We don't have to cast aspersions. This is a statutory construction analysis. And the analysis is, if they use different terminology, perhaps they meant something different. So it's not, but go ahead. If you wish to cast aspersions, while they're in session across the street,
I do not want to cast aspersion. I actually want to justify it on the basis of trying to be succinct and concise and not leaving words out. The reason why I don't think in this sentence, granting what you said, that means that it's not the court, is it still is only the court that can reinstate a case after a motion has been brought. And so I think inherent in the language, notwithstanding that in the other instances that you're referring to, the word the court is used, if I were to read these, and I'm obviously biased, but if I read these sentences together, they flow directly, and they're talking about a case that has been discontinued or dismissed, which a motion to reinstate has been made, and it's the court that must grant that motion.
Yeah, and actually, if in fact it was in the active voice, I think that your response would be entirely persuasive, because it would go back to the court. In each instance, it's in that I read previously, it's in the active voice. Here it's in the passive voice. May be reinstated. It's the only time that it switches from an active to a passive.
Well, again, I don't want to call it sloppy writing, but if it's just following, if it's, the third sentence in the paragraph, it's simply a way to transition into a case. It's talking about a case that was dismissed, so it's making the active voice is the case that was dismissed may be reinstated, implicit in that or inherent by the court on motion. Otherwise, the flip side is, as I've argued in the brief several times, it could just as easily, the legislatures, if they wanted this to be automatic other than, and it is a request that it be read to be automatic other than a timing within 1 year and notice, those are not substantive or procedural be-all and end-alls. It is clearly not intended to be automatic by its clear language. Otherwise, it would say shall, and it wouldn't have been called for a motion. There are other statutes, and there's one that I cited in the brief, where it is the clerk that upon filing of an application or a notice may take action.
May I ask you this, supposing hypothetically you had the winning hand of the semantical argument, What do we do with the 1999 deletion of for cause?
Okay.
I mean, that sounds like a trump card to me.
And it may look at that way to begin with, but if you track the whole history, I don't believe it is at all. What happened was prior to 97, there was no standard stated. It was, again, judicial discretion in and of itself. In 97, the legislature, for whatever reasons, and that's debatable what those reasons were, suddenly makes a showing of good cause a requirement. 2 years later, the legislature undoes that. There could be a host of reasons, and there could be a host of reasons why legislators decided to agree with the undoing. My belief, if we were to go into the theory behind it, is that it was viewed to be too restrictive of the discretion that the court should be imbued with. That the court's discretion is not just that there has to be, in every case, good cause.
The court could actually, so the legislature would remove good cause in order to communicate to the court, you can have bad cause.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I think it would be to remove it to say that it is not an essential requirement that you show good cause. It's an essential requirement that each of you trial judges, when faced with this motion to reinstate, believes that the merits of the motion exist. Whether you call that, if you were to go back and look at Nash v. Jewell and before that,
they could do that with a good cause standard.
Well, but good cause might then lead to more challenges coming up to this court for abuse of discretion that the good cause was really not good. Whereas I believe that judicial discretion, as I think it was Your Honor pointed out in a prior case, allows the court, each of the circuits, to be vested with their good judgment. The trial judges have been appointed as trial judges to exercise their good judgment and exercise that judicial discretion. And therefore, I don't believe that it allows bad cause. What it means is it broadens it back to the original intent of any statute that allows a trial court to exercise its judicial discretion.
Can I ask you for a second? You sort of drawing me into your argument. This whole concept of, let's look back at what the purpose of the statute is. The purpose was never for a court to weed out cases that were not meritorious. The whole purpose of this was a housekeeping statute to simply, after a period of time, cases that were not apparently being prosecuted, to get them off out of the clerk's office, into a different part of the clerk's office. That seems to me to be really along with what the appellant is arguing, and not what you're arguing.
Well, I agree to that largely, the part where I diverge is that it's not just housekeeping, it's administration of justice, and defendants are entitled to justice. This is a plaintiff's only statute. A defendant, if a case has been dismissed, unless he's a counterclaimant, is not going to be moving to reinstate a case that's been dismissed. So this is a plaintiff's statute, but the defendant, you know, the argument was made on brief by both the Trial Lawyers Association as well as appellant that this is not prejudicial to the defendant. It is prejudicial to the defendant. And so it's justice and the administration of justice and housekeeping. And I don't think that there are statutes of limitation that are intended to end cases if they're not brought by a certain time. This is a statute that's intended to end cases if they have languished or been abandoned. This case was clearly, with all due respect, abandoned for 4.5 years. Not a single thing was done. And it's not just housekeeping. It's housekeeping to a point. But the housekeeping part was the court removing it from its docket a year earlier and giving notice that it had done that and having a whole year for a person to move to reinstate it, which was done a week before that year expired. But then the court has discretion. It is on motion. It's not automatic and shall, and it's not on notice or application, and it's not by the clerk.
May I interrupt you before you run out of time? Am I right that your answer to the earlier questions about the 1999 amendment is that the best position you have for the reason for the deletion of the cause requirement was to enhance, that the intentionality of the legislature was to enhanced discretion. And I hope I heard it wrong, because it sounds counterintuitive to me. So
that is correct. That the intent of the legislature was to remove something, a requirement, an absolute requirement that had been put in, that for all we know some people were complaining about it being too stringent, and to go back to what the statute originally was, which was and is today.
But is that inference stronger than the inference that they did not want cause and going into the merits to be the subject of the hearing?
I think it is stronger in the sense that just because it was removed when it was a requirement. That's what I think the objection that the legislature was concerned about and elected to do was to remove it as a requirement, but to put it back to judicial discretion, which I think you all would agree from your decisions, is broader than just a showing of good cause. Thank you very much.
All right, rebuttal.
I'm impressed with the work of using the deletion of language to broaden the opportunities for judges. The removal of the language clearly was intended to take good cause and having to argue your case out of the reinstatement issue. This case, the record is complete on the pleadings, and in the motion to reinstate, I did mention that there had been a parallel case going in the criminal court in Prince George's County, Maryland, where the criminal, the thief, had been forced, had been subject to a reinstatement order of $35,000, which, had it been performed, would have nullified the need to reinstate this case or even to pursue this case any further. And both sides were aware of that. Unfortunately, the reliance on the restitution order is really, I guess it's sketchy. You can't rely on a restitution order to make you whole. I don't do a lot of criminal law, so when I see a $35,000 reinstatement, I treat it like it's a judgment and think eventually we're going to get paid. But that's not what happened, and so we decided we'd come back into court. And again, I respect Mr. Antonides' mention that I hadn't filed a statement of facts. And I didn't, because, you know, arguments aren't facts. We stood in front of the judge and we argued a motion. And the pleadings are complete. And the positions that we would have made then, we can make now. The positions that we argued then that may have resulted in a particular outcome, again,
counsel,
it's not
without a statement of fact or without a transcript, how do we know that the other sufficient grounds mentioned in the court's order was that you didn't give them notice and it was past the one-year period? How do we know what the other sufficient grounds was?
The service of process of the motion itself reflects the service on the parties. Mr.
My question, well, and perhaps you are answering it, but my question is, the court said just cause and sufficient grounds do not exist. So without a transcript or a statement of facts, how do we know what the sufficient grounds that may have been argued at the hearing?
Well, we only have one defendant at the ERCO. ERCO is appearing within time and is obviously has notice. So the notice and the timing.
I just use notices and a for example.
Well, you know, we never really got around to that in our argument. That was just part of what Brad had put into the order, just cause and other circumstances. It's just miscellaneous language that got into the order, which I objected to, and which the judge signed. And the part of it that is operative is the fact that the court clearly imposed a good cause requirement on the appellant, on JSR Mechanical, in being able to get the case back on the docket.
So would you say the court had discretion under the statute as it's written currently if there just hadn't been this line in the order that said just cause and sufficient grounds? In other words, would you have appealed the case if the order didn't have that line in it?
Well, I think that there was, we had two opposing orders, and the court could simply have denied it on the basis that the court's articulation of its objection was captured in my objection to the entry of the order. In my experience, if the judge disagrees with you quoting the court or you saying something in order that you didn't bring up before, they will tell you that. They say, you didn't preserve this in our argument, Mr. Merkel. If, in fact, that's an opportunity for the court to review your objection on its order before it's signed. But these were all objections that had been articulated in open court with the judge. And the good cause requirement was clearly the essence of this result.
All right, thank you very much. The court will be in recess until 11:05.
All rise.